to the Man Up Podcast.
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems.
A spiritual oasis for men. We're not pastors, just regular guys.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
So, for the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men, this is Man Up.
Hey, and welcome everybody. This is Man Up. Man Up podcast number 129. Hard to believe. And we're glad you're here. Where is here? Here is Sugarland Baptist Church, Sugarland, Texas. So grab a globe, spin it around. Bang! Find Texas. Southeast side of Texas is Houston. Southwest side of Houston is Sugarland. And that's where we're at. We're not pastors. We're just regular guys on a spiritual journey. And that we're glad that you're here with us. We've been in the study of the Ten Commandments, and just to give you a little update on basically what we do, in case this is your first time finding us, we take a adult Bible fellowship or Sunday school lesson, and we go through it, and we kind of update it, and we apply it to a man's life. And just regular guys, we're not pastors. We're just regular guys, and each of us are on this individual faith journey, and we're talking about stuff that you really can't talk about anywhere else. And if you've been joining us over the weeks, this is our 129th podcast, and you can find us on iHeartRadio. We're also on iTunes. All of our episodes are archived on SoundCloud. We're also on Facebook at Man-Up, and we have a website, which is at man-upspiritualoasis.com, where you can leave us a comment or you can actually find this stuff. And we have a really unique way of presenting this material because we understand that you're men and not everybody has a lot of time. Especially when you're a man, time is of the essence and it is very precious. Say you're a family man, say you're a working man, or and say that you're a volunteer and you're also a community person. Your time is precious, and we recognize that. So what we do is we basically have a panel discussion. We do an overview first, and maybe this will speak to you. And then we read the scripture, and then we have a deeper discussion. And so you're welcome to join in by posting comments or just by listening along. And so we're so glad you're here. What we do is we also have guys that are very different and from different backgrounds here. And that's why we have a panel discussion and we introduce the panelists not only by their profession, but basically what they do, because you might identify from one or another's point of view a little bit more than the other. My name is Bill Cox. I'm basically a sales guy, but I'm kind of a writer, actor also. And if you might not, if you've listened to this and you've heard me as a host, you might recognize that I got a little edge today. I'm not in the best of moods, and you may not either. So you might really identify with me. I've had kind of a crappy week, and you know what? There's, you know that thing called fight or flight? There's also another thing called just dealing with it and walking through it as you're getting arrows shot at you. That's kind of the way I feel too, because I'm just feeling feisty, and maybe you're feeling that way. And so I just wanted to go ahead and throw that out there as I introduce the panelists that we have today. And he is awesome. He is a world-class trainer at a Fortune 100 company. Also, kind of the intellectual, and we call him the professor. Robert Koshy was here. And we have a professional policy writer who's a bit of a professional gambler. Mr. Steve Titch is here. Just want to recognize a couple of guys that are our normal panelists that aren't here. Mr. Michael Cropper, he is an attorney, but he's also a prosecutor, so he could throw the book at you, or he could defend you, just depends on how he feels. We call him the judge, and he's not here tonight. And Kyle Trahan, who is our class deacon, he's also an insurance guy, and this guy, he's got the ultimate man scam going on right now, because what he is doing, he is in a camper at a campsite, and working. So he's working in the day and he's camping at night. So that's, I call that a man scam if I ever heard of one. So Anyway, we have been in the Ten Commandments. And, you know, honestly, I thought this was going to be, like, dry as eating a bag of oats. And I thought the discussions would be short. But this has been awesome. And for me personally, I have never really studied the Ten Commandments. I've read them before, but I've never really applied them or actually even really kind of thought about them. It's really been kind of convicting. But as I go through this faith journey myself, yeah, I can't really correct what I've already done. But man, I can sure change my own direction based on what I've studied and what I've learned from these guys here and what we've talked about in this. And this has been awesome. And we are in the Baptist Way Press, which is what we're using for the text for this discussion, the Connect 360 Pillars, Still Standing After Centuries of Change. And we're on the 10th commandment, and I'm just going to go around the room, introduce the fellas, and let them give a basic overview of this particular lesson. And with that, I'm going to start out with Mr. Steve Titch.
Well, we're on the last of the 10 commandments, you shall not covet. I'll let you read the full text when we get around to you.
Both lines.
Yeah, it's a little longer than...
This is three lines.
It's the three lines and under.
Right.
So, more words. The lesson talks about covetousness, and really, we've been talking about the culture a lot, and the culture really now is always... Maybe it's always been, but certainly in our time, it's about creating desire for something, making you want something. And though the lesson talks about, you know, what is the path to contentment? Is contentment different from covetousness? What I do want to get into is what the culture tells us leads to contentment isn't what really does it. And there's a case in point. We'll just look at advertising in general.
Oh, no question about it.
The idea behind now everybody wants to be content. Everybody wants happiness, some sublime sense of well-being. What you're told is that you can get it through a product. And it's not the idea that your iPhone can keep you, you know, it's a tool for keeping you in touch or a tool for doing that. It's that they sell the iPhone as to how it makes you feel. And so you can identify with the guy in the commercial or the woman in the commercial who's, you know, professional, bopping around town, really hip, you know, because that's...
On a skateboard.
That's what this... Because that's the imprint... That's, you know, that's how it'll make you feel.
Right.
But really, where do we find contentment? And I think that's the other question in this.
Excellent. Professor.
So, let me talk about this. So, the two words, and I just want to bring this up because I think it'll help frame our discussion a little bit before I bring up the other part. There's two words that they mention in our text, in the book actually, that are used interchangeably with covet. One is for more, and the idea of somebody is trying to fill up a purse that has no bottom in it, or greed receiving from avarice. The other word that gets translated covet means reaching out for forbidden fruit. And so covetousness leads to basically everything else we've been looking at.
When Eve looks at the apple and she says it looks desirable, isn't the same
exactly.
Who her word
exactly.
appears there when, as it appears in
when
this,
God when, accepts Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's.
Mm-hmm.
Cain is same thought. Mm-hmm. Why isn't mine that good?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the whole David looking on the rooftop thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
where that leads to mm-hmm. false witness,
mm-hmm.
murder, lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, the whole it runs mm-hmm. down the hole again.
It's and the so, gateway.
Yeah, it is. And so because of that, here's a little training trick. If there is something I absolutely, positively, most definitely want you to remember from training, there is two places it goes. It goes in the very front of the training, or it goes in the very back of the training.
Or maybe both.
Sometimes both. What I find interesting is the commandments start with, I am the Lord your God. That is, mm-hmm. who brought you out of the land of Egypt. They end with, don't covet. They bookend everything else in
this. Is this the summary? Because it goes on to say that covetousness leads to the breaking of so many other commandments.
Yep.
And once again, it's those, like Kyle said about false witness last week, the commandments get easier to break as they go down the list.
They did.
And this is another one that isn't like murder or adultery or stealing. This one is a little more difficult.
But here's the thing. Covet gets a bad rap. It's always bad. It says always bad. But you could almost interchange covet with want. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, you could want to be more righteous. Mm-hmm. Or you could want to be a better person,
right?
Which is not necessarily bad. You know what I'm saying? Whereas covet almost always, I mean, it's the ugly stepsister of want.
But actually, it
goes to your motive and what you do.
But to speak to what you're saying, in Hebrew, the word covet, as it's translated, is a neutral word. It doesn't always connote something bad or like wanting in the wrong way. It's just desire.
It's desire, yeah. right, desire or want. And with that, this is the very last time. If you've been listening to us, I've been channeling Charlton Heston from 1964 in the Ten Commandments. Yes. This has been awesome. He's better than me, but I'm going to do it one last time. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
So Steve mentioned advertising. I'm going to bring up another thing that we've hit on multiple times as we've gone through this, that I think is increased. The culture's out of control. And I use myself as an example. So on Friday was November 1st. So on November 1st, I officially started my new period of being CPLP certified for 3 years. It runs from November 1st to October 31st. So November 1st, 2016 to 2019, October 31st is my first. So I am recertified. It's a CPLP or certifiable. My wife likes the joke. So I simply went on LinkedIn and put out there, you know, proud to announce that I've been officially recertified as a CPLP for the next 3 years. That was my post. No picture, no nothing. I'll admit I got a dopamine rush last several days because I've gotten 98 likes and 35 comments from people all over the country.
Well, it's an achievement. It's an achievement.
But right. The thing is, someone on the outside looking is, why don't I have that? Well, how do I get that? Well, that's a great conversation, and I'd love to talk to you about it if you're in the training world. But take it from another spin. So someone out there, and they have put up their Christmas decorations all right. By the way, my photo of my Christmas decorations, they're still in the storage unit. But there are people that have put their Christmas decorations out, and they're out there posting. And you're looking at it and you're going, oh my God, my tree's not going to look that good.
Well, you know,
And
so how do I get my tree? Well, I can't afford that. How do I get, what do I, it's one of those, it covetousness, like you said, there is some good parts to it.
It's right. So, but you got to worry about where it creates comparing.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead. You were going to say something.
Well, one thing that the author put in this very cool story, and I'll read it real quick. The story attributed to Tolstoy about a poor man who was promised all the land he could walk around in one day. Early one morning, he began to walk as hard as he could. He pushed himself beyond his physical limitations. Near the end of the day, when he had almost circled the broad area of land he would soon acquire, he dropped dead. Many of us spend our life trying to collect all the possessions we can acquire. Finally, when we have circled them, we drop dead. In the parable of the fool, the death angel says, now, who will own what you have prepared? And I think that gives a very good visual on covetousness, you know, in the bad sense. And I was raised on a farm, and you know, this was one of the things that I never really had a problem with, because I lived my level, mm-hmm. and we were fairly poor, but we were farmers, and basically everybody was poor. Mm-hmm. You know, so we didn't have that kind of comparison. But it's different. I live in a subdivision, mm-hmm. and my kids are. It's all the comparisons with everybody on the block.
It is. Seems counterintuitive, but it's true. The research has shown time and time again. Poor people are nowhere near as covetousness or seized by envy the way wealthier
really?
People.
Really?
You're putting that to the test. You're putting that right to the test. U.S., you know, you had a little community. You had each other. I'm not going to make sense. You had necessities. It was somewhat egalitarian. You didn't... Nobody was really that more wealthy than others. But even in your average suburban subdivision, who you live around, you're all probably, because you're living where you are, pretty close to the same income level. But you're all struggling to outdo each other, and that becomes a tension point for those. Therapy, I think you can get under control. But still, it's another bit of tension. Or stress that, you know, oh, well, so-and-so has a Porsche now, or so-and-so got a Mercedes. What am I going to do? I've only got a Toyota, and I got to feel like I've got to keep up. But I think what I was going to say here is that, because we're talking about desire in itself bad, I think where you have to start reflecting is, you know, what is it you actually want? What is that something you're coveting it, and yet, or you want? And you might want just a good education for your kids, or you might just want health. What are you going to sacrifice for it? And you may sacrifice important things for something more important. But at the end of the day, I think the big question to ask, no matter what you want, be it a new car, a new house, health, you've got to answer the question: why is it important to you?
And I think when you get to the why does somebody want to move to a nicer neighborhood? Mm-hmm. Let's start with that. So I grew up on the east side of Houston, a small town called Galena Park. Mm-hmm. Kind of my experience, and we were all fairly happy there, and we were all basically blue collar. Mm-hmm. We were as blue collar as you could get. All of our dads worked mm-hmm. on the ship channel or affiliated mm-hmm. industries,
the plants,
doing all that. Doing all that work. But by the time I was a senior in high school, neighborhood was starting on the downslide. And now, you know, it is not a safe neighborhood. So wanting to make enough money to move out of there to somewhere else because I will be safer, that's good motivation.
Dude, that is a mm-hmm. very good example. I lived in this place called A-Leaf when I first moved here.
I'm very familiar with A-Leaf.
Right.
And it was a nice neighborhood when you moved
here.
Dude,
it was a nice neighborhood. I was stupid. I came from Michigan. I'm not from here. It was an economic migration. I wanted a job. There was no jobs unless I wanted to continue to pig farm in Michigan. I got married, and we had a baby. I'm walking over to the grocery store, and I'm walking through. I like to walk. I'm just one of those kind of people, you know. And I'm walking through the parking lot, and there's six empty wallets on the parking lot. Used wallets. And I looked at that, and I thought, probably a little bit of thievery going on around here. And it was at that point in time. Now, I hadn't experienced any of it myself.
So that was what, like 95, right?
Probably, yeah.
95, 96?
And that was when I made my move to someplace that I perceived as safer, Sugarland.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that was the thing. It wasn't, for me, it wasn't necessarily prestige, but it was my life was changing. I was growing up. I had a wife now. I had a family. I mean, being a single guy, I wouldn't have really cared.
I honestly get this, though.
You know what I'm saying? But being a man,
But that, I don't think that's covetousness in this sense, because it's not
destructive. But I think that's a good place to draw the distinction,
yeah,
though.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
Give us how bad.
Let's go back. So I'm living in A Leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, okay, whatever's going on around there, but you know what? I need to have a Mercedes.
Right.
And you know what? I don't care if I live in A-Leaf. I want the biggest. And there are some really big, nice homes in the A-Leaf area.
Oh,
I'm very familiar. I lived there for a couple of years, too, right. So I'm very familiar with it. And you know what? I just want to live there because I need to have the biggest, baddest house here, and I'm going to have the big Cadillac or the Mercedes.
Right.
Versus, I need to move to make sure my family is safer.
Right.
I think that's kind of some of the differences, or at the end of the day. So follow the stock market. Do I? Yeah, actually I do. Why do I follow the stock market? Because at some point in my life, I don't want to get up and punch a clock every day.
Right.
For someone else. So I'm watching my money because I know I have a certain dollar I need to hit to where I can wake up every day and have a similar lifestyle to what I have now, short of going home, short of getting up and going to work every day. Okay. Now, am I trying to watch stock market to get a millionaire because I want $1 million and I got to have $1 million? No. I think that's where the differences come into play. It's when you start wanting things just to have them to do your counting.
You know, the funny thing about it is, the consumerism that we have been led to make you happy. This thing will make you happy. And I'll never forget, I had a friend of mine, I don't remember the exact model of car, that he just had to have this particular car. It was awesome. And he finally bought it. And not only did the payment, but the insurance almost put him in the poorhouse. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is, the company came out with a newer, sexier model the next year. So even that thing that was supposed to bring him happiness, in a way, kind of turned on him when the new model came out. And it wasn't necessarily the Joneses, but it was the automaker
I got to keep up. And that's the kind of, there's always a newer model coming out.
That's right.
Well, and part of it is, you have to understand kind of how advertising works. Interesting. I was actually on a webinar today on developing learner personas. And we talked about how marketing develops personas now. Marketing does not really, it used to be back in the day that marketing was trying to target the 25 to 45 year olds making $75,000 to $100,000 a year. That was the target market. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not. They're targeting the mom in San Antonio, Texas, who is slightly overweight, that drives a used minivan, who is there for her kids, but stays home because her husband makes enough money, but he drives the newer. They're down to that level when they're doing marketing. So you're really super being targeted now. Because the other part they found out is that, you know, I joked earlier about getting my little dopamine hit looking at how many people liked my post, you know. They are literally targeting people for that, and it's driving, as you said, the consumerism.
This is actually, this is something that's very, very new. And
yes,
you see a little bit of the kind of now the pushback, the popular pushback against Amazon, Facebook, because what Robert's speaking to now is, yeah, it's no more whole, you know, blocks of demographic. It's, how can I get Robert and how can I get Bill, who are both fairly close in age, but as you read, very different personality types, how do I get them to buy my product? I learn a frightful amount about each of you.
By what
and
you
then
search.
Pull your, by search, by what you buy, by what's sold. And it's
yes.
not just, let me keep you friendly, because I've been around this. There are there are companies within companies within companies that work on basically gathering and classifying information about you, where they know what will push your buttons.
Yep,
right.
And how, so they're not just manipulating you on a macro scale, which is what advertising, you know, like to do. They will figure out what is going to make Robert or Bill click on that.
So I can
and,
tell
and,
you
all and this. So yeah, and so that's what you're up against out there in this culture.
My nightstand, my lamp on my nightstand in our bedroom came back and does not work anymore. So we've been doing a lot of Wayfair shopping, refurnishing our house. And so I looked on, I go to bed before my wife does because I get up at 4 a.m. to go to work. So I thought, you know what, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna find one with a nightlight built in. That way I can go to bed and turn the low night light on her side where she can go to bed and get to bed. And I don't have to leave the bright light on, you know, for me to go to bed. And do you know in my freaking Facebook, LinkedIn, Bloomberg page, the Bloomberg page I went to on my work computer that was not searched on by Wayfair has a freaking ad
for the exact thing
on it. I'm like, how did you, on my
right.
Facebook feed I get, I'm trying to figure out how they made the connection to my I pull up, it's not Bloomberg, it's
Breitbart.
Big chart. Bigcharts.com. Mm-hmm. I just pull it up every day and leave it open to watch the markets on. It's an old habit from working in the finance industry for years. But on that page, they pulled up the lamp. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I didn't even search for lamps on my work computer.
Right. And before we get to the hard break, I just want to tell this quick story. Years ago, I worked for a moving company, United Van Lines, and I had a call one day. They said, Bill, we want to get our stuff out of storage. Hey, not a problem. How long has it been here? 6 months, you know, typically it's 25 years. And they called, and we dug it out of storage. It had been there, and they'd been paying storage on items for 25 years. And you know, I was there when they opened it up.
Like
it was in good shape, but it was
it was
25-year-old stuff. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our hard break. This is Man Up Podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Man Up Spiritual Oasis for Men podcast. Originating out of Sugar Land, Houston, Texas, USA, it's the faith-based man podcast that women enjoy too. Called authentic, timely, and unexpectedly funny, Man Up has been encouraging and entertaining audiences since 2016 and continues to be one of the fastest-growing shows in its segment. Want to book a speaker, show, or post a comment? Go to Man Up on Facebook or our website, www.man-upspiritualoasis.com. And now, back to the No Church Answers Tour and the Fellows of Man Up.
This is Man Up, Spiritual Oasis for Men. We're not pastors, we're just regular guys. We've been studying the Ten Commandments, and we are on commandment number 10. You shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. And, you know, in reading that, I get the idea that it's supposed to be all-encompassing, and I think about, don't covet somebody else's life. And be authentic enough to live your own life. And I think there's so many people out there that they don't realize what other people are going through because they live online, they look at the Facebook feeds that only show them eating at the expensive restaurants, taking the great vacations, but they don't see their whole life. Maybe they live in an apartment that has nothing and they're alone because they're saving up for these fabulous vacations, you know. And there's so many people that they only post the frosting and there's no cake. And I think that is a big part of this commandment.
You get wrapped into it. Yeah, and yeah, like, oh, what's there to it? It's another depressing part of social media right there.
Right. Live an authentic life.
And I think, and unfortunately, my father was the envied people and resented people's success or And it was kind of sad. I mean, it just seems at you. Why? I mean, that's the big question. Why? You've got your own thing. You've got your own family. You've got your own thing going on. There's no need to worry about. You know, sometimes it's nice to say, you know, well, kind of like Tevye, yeah. If I were a rich man.
Yeah. You're right.
But he ends that song with an address to God. And he basically, right. This is the key, he acknowledges God's sovereignty in a humorous way. He says, would it spoil your vast eternal plan? He acknowledges the plan is there. And say, all right, come on, does it have to be this way? But so his covetousness isn't driving him. I mean, and we all think about what it would be like if we won the lottery, won the World Series of Poker.
Right. Won the World Series. I've never dreamed of that. I've never thought of it.
But it's, and you're right, it's funny when you look at social media. So a friend of mine at work and I were joking about, she moved and she took a picture of the nice table setting. And sent it to a friend. Mm-hmm. And so, oh, that's amazing. Y'all moved in and you're already there? And then she sent her the second picture, which from the other angle, which is the table with all the junk piled up and thrown in the background. You know, but it does create a false sense as you're looking, and it's a false sense that it does make us want other things, because and it's beyond the advertising.
Right.
You know, it's really there. And I think, I think we ought to talk about a little bit is how do you get to the contentment?
Well, I can tell you this.
I think that is where this comes. How do you get content with where you live is just fine?
My dad was funny, and he was content in his own skin, and he kind of taught me this kind of stuff. And one time in particular, I'll never forget it. We're in our old stock truck, you know. Basically, I always tell people that farmers are a funny breed. They get their new truck, it's their nice new truck, and then it gets beat up a little bit. It becomes their work truck, gets beat up even more, becomes the manure truck, and then they sell it to my dad. Yeah, you know, but we were one time we were going through town and there was a beautiful new truck with chrome rims on it. It was brand new. It was beautiful. I go, man, Dad, that looks great. Wouldn't you like to have that? He goes, I wouldn't want the payments. And a beautiful woman stepped out of it. I go, man, Dad, isn't she beautiful? Wouldn't you like that? He goes, I wouldn't want the payments on that either. But he was content in his own skin. And I think as men, it's up to us. We set the example. We set it for our kids, and because there's going to be all sorts of peer pressure. I remember my wife was talking with a teacher of our children, and she said the biggest things that the poor kids have every new shoe. Gaming system, electronic device. They may not have food or a decent house, but their parents try to take care of them to make sure that they have the latest and greatest as far as like labels and outward things.
But that is unfortunate. That is so sad in its own way. And I'm not being judgmental. I'm just showing kind of the end result of what this points to. They think they're doing right by their kids.
Yeah.
Right. By giving them,
you know, their kids don't need a Game Boy. Their kids need a good meal. Their kids don't need the. And I mean, I know they probably remember themselves when they didn't. I remember when I was school and I didn't have such and such a thing and I felt bad. But and again, and I think yes, they're giving them the, and that is, and I'm not going to say it's not hard because you know you don't want to see your kid unhappy, but you've got to balance that. Basically, you're buying in by saying okay. All the kids in your class have this, you're going to have this now. And rather than saying, in our house, we don't have to worry about that. We do, yep, we read books. We have, you know, we have music. We do other things to entertain ourselves.
Right.
And it always cracked me up because when we were growing up, my kids would go to their friends' houses that had mm-hmm. the, and we do not have a bad house by any stretch mm-hmm. of the imagination, especially now, mm-hmm. but we didn't have two stories with a game room and a living room and a dining room and a separate, you know, we didn't have all that. And everybody's like, well, you know, with your wife's income, you should move, and because y'all could live in a bigger, better mm-hmm. house. And I'm like, yeah, but I'd spend money on that. And instead, one summer, my oldest son went to a band camp, mm-hmm. two scout camps, a church right. camp, mm-hmm. and we did a week-long trip to Arkansas mm-hmm. and camped out in the middle right. and dug for diamonds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, is my kid going to remember I had a really nice game room upstairs? Or is my kid going to remember that? And my kids still talk about one or two of the trips where we made as a family where we did crazy camping stuff, mm-hmm. you know, versus remembering, oh, well, we had that really nice house. No, yes.
But see, that's the thing I really think about this lesson. Live authentically.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. honestly, my wife, camping to her is no AC. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's as close to camping as mm-hmm. my family gets. But live authentically, and we do the stuff that is meaningful mm-hmm. for our family, and it's unique to our family, mm-hmm. and we're content in our skin. Mm-hmm. And I think that brings us authentic happiness, as opposed with trying mm-hmm. to be and compete with other people that mm-hmm. we don't share their values.
And it's like
I think that's the best word I've heard is authentic.
And in Philippians, I mean, actually, Paul himself, he calls it a secret. He's learned the secret in Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 through 13. Paul writes, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. Yes, I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Both ends. And he says, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. He turns it over to faith, which, of course, kind of 2,000 years down the line is kind of a churchy answer. But we see throughout his other letters, we can see what he means by looking to that strength. And I think it's authenticity, gratitude, and thanksgiving. Just always, you know, always try to be thankful for something. Not try to gloss over bad things that are happening to you, but that, you know, somebody's there. And on the other foot, and I have some notes, share joys. Be happy for people. Share grieving, and all of that, and is I think part of this idea of putting aside the covetousness and moving toward a contentment.
And I think that as men, so many people want us. There's times like I mean, this week I've had a rough week. And people say, Bill, cheer up. I don't want to cheer up. I'm in the middle of, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I am being authentic because I am pissed. Because things have not been going my way. I do not want to cheer up. And people are trying to, like, at work, they're trying to get me to come out of my shell because I'm normally an extrovert, but I'm dealing with these issues and my mind is just going 100 miles an hour. It just seems like this week, if I'm not solving a problem, I'm creating a problem. Or every problem I solve creates two more. It's just kind of the way the week has been. But that's the way I am. That's it. I don't want to be the guy that is just the milk toast. Yeah, hey, you know. That is not it. That's not the life. And when you're being a man out there, I think so much of it, not only coveting is, I mean, it's not only about stuff, it's about what other people have and what other people do. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. If you don't feel that way, don't do it.
Well, it's what you said at the beginning. It's about living authentic and realizing where you are. And then using where you are to create those family memories, to create, you do that for you so that your family can enjoy and have those memories. And in a way, that builds your faith lesson. And I think that's what we're called as men, to really lead out in that and be countercultural. For God's sake, we've been talking about this for 11 weeks now, counting the first.
Right.
And you talked about our culture is full of nihilism now.
Oh, yeah, that, I remember that.
That's the ongoing theme of this.
It is.
That is, you know if nothing matters except what you feel like at the moment.
Yeah. Right.
Number one, acknowledge
absolutely
there's God. Mm-hmm. Number two, you know, don't put anything in front of him. Number three, you know, we have social mores. We have to exist within this world. You know, find some rest time for you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to always be super busy. Guys, we're the worst at that. It's okay to be down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Take some downtime. You know, don't murder physically or spiritually or mentally or any other way. Don't steal intellectually. Don't go rob a bank, but don't steal your boss's ideas either and put them out there as yours. You know, don't go trying to jump every little piece of tail that's run around. You know, don't want things that really aren't yours. You know, find ways to go put the hard work in to go get your own thing. You know, it's all about resetting the culture that we're in now back to a quote-unquote less hurried, less AI'd, I'll go ahead and use the, you know, world where, hey, you know what? We're all in this together. We're all going to do together. We're all part of one big great faith family, and we're supposed to move forward as a community. You know,
well, faith as an individual should be comforting to you.
Yeah.
As you go on this faith journey, it should be comforting to you. But then, in a corporate setting, because you're all people of faith, it should be comforting to those people as they have their own struggles. You see, I mean, and that's the thing. It's not that it necessarily makes it easier. It's just a little bit more comforting that someone else understands what you're going through.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we're called to do, not only for ourselves, but for the other people of faith around us.
Bring it out, yeah.
And this is podcast number 129. We're going to just go around the room and get some final thoughts, not only on the 10th commandment, but basically on the overall study. And start with Mr. Steve Titch.
Shuffling through my notes. Well, it's really the 10 commandments aren't about rules. They're guidelines for liberation. And this final one, covetousness, if really it's to tie it back to the first commandment, because you end up, you really want first and foremost is your relationship with God. And you know, as humans, we always fall short of that. But if you start pursuing something thinking it's going to give you what God promises can give you, you'll be disappointed in the end. You'll want more of it. It will fall short. And that's especially with material things or even certain emotional things. I gotta marry that guy. I gotta marry that woman. I gotta have, you know, it's even beyond the simple, you know, material stuff. I'm gonna close with one thought. J.R. Tolkien was a Christian, and Lord of the Rings is full of Christian imagery and Christian themes. But if you want to find the personification of covetousness in this, it's Gollum.
I knew he was going to do that.
He was utterly destroyed by his desire that he didn't even understand. The ring possessed him, and the ring could symbolize a lot of things, including sin, but all Gollum wanted was the ring, which when he had it, he hid it away anyway. And he was consumed by it, as you know in the story, and he was a miserable wretch, and he had once been a hobbit-like creature at one time, we learned. There it is. That's what, and that's in dramatic, literal terms, but that's what covetousness the end result could be.
Outstanding. Professor.
I just want to thank Steve for letting me geek out on Lord of the Rings for a moment. I'm just going to finish out with two verses of Scripture, and I'm going to read them backwards. They're from Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, and then verse 2. So I'm going to kind of do them in backwards order. So in verse 5, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. And then back to 2, set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. And really, it boils down to that. You know, God calls us to a new life. And, you know, we kind of joke with the youth a lot about being called to be in the world, but not of the world. And we really are called to set a different standard. We're called to turn around and look away from this crazy culture that we're living in, where your worth is valued on your Facebook likes and your number of Instagram posts and how many times you get retweeted, to a life that's called to be authentic, that other people can really look at and really live to be a part of. And I think that is what we're really called for as Christians. And that's really what these past 11 weeks have been all about, as we've talked about this with the commandments. And it's funny, I'm kind of like you, Bill. I thought this was going to be really hard because, for God's sake, we only got one little verse we got to do with every time. And these have been some of the most meaningful discussions we've had from a culture standpoint, because, you know, we've not been afraid to look it in the eye and look at the culture and say, guys, as Christian men and leaders, we are called to look at the culture and say, it's wrong. What we're doing, what we're experiencing, what we're going out with, how we're approaching it is wrong. And guess what? If you look at what's going on in society and in the world, it's not working. Badly not working. Like, horribly not working. Like, so much not working. Yeah, the drug cartel deal down in Mexico right now, if you, just to kind of date a little bit, there was a shootout in Mexico City, I believe.
I think it was on the road somewhere. This is somewhere, the morning.
Nine Americans
fairly
killed.
Fairly close to the border, but it was a whole family.
Yeah, whole family wiped out by the cartels.
Children, kids, babies.
Yeah. You know, and why? Oh, because and why are the cartels powerful? The cartels are powerful because there are Americans looking for their latest fix because they can't deal with life as it exists right now. You know, and it's learn to accept where we are. Learn to be authentic with your life.
Where you are is where you are. When you fantasize and you do drugs, and that drug may be a material item or it may be an actual drug, when it wears off, where are you? You're back where you are. This is Man Up, Man Up Podcast number 129. My name is Bill Cox. I'm the host and director, and this has been a great discussion on the Ten Commandments. And for me, it was fairly convicting. I looked at my past because of it, and with a little bit of luck and work, I'm going to be better in the future. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are on iHeartRadio. We're also on iTunes. All of our episodes are archived on SoundCloud. We have a Facebook page that's at Man-Up, where you can go ahead and pose a question. We'll go ahead and handle it here on the Man Up podcast. And we also have a website, which is at man-upspiritualoasis.com. We encourage each and every one of you, and if you're ever in the Sugar Land area, stop in. We'd be more than happy to welcome you here, Sugar Land Baptist Church. But also want to encourage you to get involved in a local Bible-based church. Why local? So you'll go and join an adult Bible fellowship or Sunday school class and find a men's only group where you can have small group discussions, kind of like what we have here, and get authentic. And if there is one, start one. This is Man Up!
You've been listening to Man Up.
You've got answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Dedicated to the uncommon man, created by equally uncommon men.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You can contact us on Facebook under Man-Up. Post questions, and we'll answer them right here on the Man Up Podcast.